Hey folks, Jeff here. Today, this afternoon, beautiful afternoon in Boulder, I'm sitting in my kitchen with an old friend of mine, Charlie Cropley, who is a naturopathic physician here in Boulder and has been for a good long time. And I worked with you 30 years ago, Charlie, yeah. I think, or 25 anyway.
Yeah.
And we've been friends and colleagues and fellow travelers together in the spiritual realms.
Yes.
And it's wonderful to have you with us here today, Charlie.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes. Pleasure to be here.
And we're going to talk about something that's really, I think, important to all of us who are evolutionaries and really at the cutting edge of our own development. And that is that we realize, if we are indeed evolving beings, that there's a edge that we're working at. And there's new stuff coming online. There's a new Jeff coming online, a new Charlie wanting to come online at all times. And because we realize this, we have the opportunity to actually partner with emergence.
Yeah.
In ways that more consciously bring this online. And if I could just ramble just a little bit in advance here, I think we have to realize that just as evolution, every stage of evolution has been radically new, brings radically new things yeah. into the world.
Yeah.
There's a radical new world that wants to come online and radical new ways of thinking.
Yeah.
And what got this whole conversation started off is that you emailed me an article online somewhere that is about the prodigious savants. And just talk a little bit about this, Charlie, and what sort of this sparked in you.
Mm-hmm. There was a word that preceded savant. I think it was acquired savant, okay. something like that. And those were stories of people who had suffered, if you would, some type of brain trauma, right? And came out of this. The one story was of a man who had, I don't know, let's say he was in a car accident. And then some weeks later, he was over at a friend's house, and their friend had a piano there in the house. And he had never played piano in his life and was attracted to go over and sit down and play the piano. And was able to play apparently masterful level music, which I think came to him over a number of hours. And in several hours, he was playing outstanding music and had a fondness for it and a love of it. And that came about.
And he had never played piano before.
Never
in his
played
life.
Piano before. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had other savants that were kind of instantaneously masterful in other areas.
Yeah.
And the question that it raises for us is, my God, what is our potential as human beings? That's there somewhere. How do we explain that? Do we just write it off?
Yeah.
And if we have the ability to do those types of things, then how do we access that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what was also interesting about the article was it talked about a range of these people who become artists. And, of course, Dustin Hoffman, Rain Man, is just yeah. a classic cultural example of a savant. Yeah. And also 60 Minutes did their article about these people who can literally remember everything about every day of their lives. And what they were wearing, what they ate, who they were with, and can call it up at will. Mm-hmm. And that this, of course, these capacities are there for us.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, they actually come online after some sort of a brain injury or a brain disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember reading these books by Oliver Sacks. I don't know if you've ever read them.
No.
The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat is one of my favorites. I love that title. But it's about these people with brain injuries. And the one that comes to mind is the one who developed the smelling ability of a dog. I mean, he could smell
wow.
literally 10,000 times better than the average human being, like one part per billion. So the interesting thing is, and it's brought up in this article, is that we normally think of development the way you and I often do, Charlie, and that
exactly.
is, you know, developing discipline and good habits
yeah.
and, you know, seeing what's next and bringing it on more consciously. But that there's also a phenomena that happens where brain is somehow inhibited or injured, which actually releases
yeah.
the pre-inhibited aspects of the brain
yeah.
that, and we can also see this in psychedelic drugs. Uh-huh. It's not that psychedelic drugs bring something to the party. Mm-hmm. They actually inhibit parts of the brain that allow, you know, insight that's already there to blossom.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that something?
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we really think, you know, what's in us and how do we then do this without having a concussion?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Charlie... how do we do this?
One of my teachers, Yogananda, right?
Okay.
Do you have any familiarity with Yogananda?
Just passing.
What a titan.
Really?
A true. He came to the U.S. in the 1920s after this is a man who was born as a child, just in love with God. Story of him at three or something flying a kite on his porch, and the kite, he dropped the string and the kite went off into the clouds and he was crying, and his mother came out and went, well, it's gone, and he went, no, and he's prayed to God and the kite came back and landed in his hand, and this was his life. And he went on to train with his teacher and then came to the United States in the 1920s and wrote a book called An Autobiography of a Yogi. And his book is full of stories of visiting different saints in India, because that was his passion. Who could walk in water and be in two places at the same time and be buried in the earth for years at a time? And these superhuman powers. And Yogananda embodied those as well in somewhat of a more ordinary way. But part of what inspires me about him was that he felt that habits, self-injurious behaviors, were grafts on our true nature, something that grew out that lived off of us, but is a deformity and something not meant to be. And he absolutely refused habit.
Refused all habit or just bad habit?
Just whatever habits he chose. In other words, he had complete governance over himself.
Yeah.
And so he would sleep in ice cold weather that other people can't get enough clothes and blankets on them, and he could sleep in a pair of shorts if he chose to. And the same way with his eating, he would just incinerate the seeds of karma with the power of his will. Recognizing that something is right for him, he had the power of concentration to call forth his goodness and to completely free himself of those compulsions.
Mm-hmm.
And that then, to me, just inspires the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But coming down to my work as a naturopathic physician, is I'm involved really with every client in drawing the links between the manifestations of their illness, whether it's called MS or arthritis or whatever it is, and their behaviors. In particular, in my work, it's the ways they eat, that they move and rest, that they think, and that they communicate and relate. Those are the things those are all living skills that we all must perform as human beings. And so drawing the link of how have I been injuring myself in these four areas, and then how can I change those behaviors? And it comes down to how do I develop the personal power to stop what's injuring me on a very simple level, eating too many sweets.
Well, then let me use that sort of thing as an example and ask you a very specific question about your own achievements here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, the way that so many of us injure ourselves quite consciously is by what you just said, overeating, eating the wrong things, drinking, drugs, whatever it might be,
mm-hmm.
that gives us an immediate payoff at the expense of, you know, delaying gratification for a longer term good.
Yeah.
Now, you, in your life, Charlie Cropley,
mm-hmm.
have mastered this in a way that I have actually never seen or actually ever heard of. And that is because I was at your house not long ago, and we're doing a nutrition session. Mm-hmm. And so I just asked you, so, you know, we're talking about I should eat oatmeal and whatever I should eat, whatever for breakfast. And I said, what do you eat for breakfast, Charlie? And you looked at me for a long second and I think did some considering and said, I'll tell you exactly what I had for breakfast. So you went to your refrigerator, brought out a plate with this kind of dark red black mass on it under a plastic, and it showed me that what you had for breakfast that morning was the raw liver of a wild elk.
Exactly.
And then you've proceeded to show me everything you eat in your refrigerator, which is basically different versions of chopped vegetables with way too little dressing.
Yes.
So tell me about that. And the rest of us are, you know, struggling to not pull into, you know, good times and get a cheeseburger.
Right. Yes.
What's up with that? How do you do that?
Well, how I do it, that's the question of this talk.
It is.
And yeah. And so if you would, I began the same as everybody else, although I believe this has been my destiny. Of course, it has been my destiny. And so from first reading about this, I was captivated and embarked on this path. But I spent many years, there was a time in my life where I used to eat 6 candy bars a day on my, you know, 6 candy bars a day, where there was a time in my life where I would eat so much. And the eating 6 candy bars a day, and I was going to speak about my bulimic behavior, began after I was completely convinced of the benefit of wholesome eating, right?
Wow.
Right.
So you became convinced
yes.
of the benefits of
yeah.
it, then went into a binge lifestyle.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. I couldn't control myself. I couldn't eat the way that I read in these books.
I think I'm at this stage.
Yeah, most. Yeah.
I mean, there's no lack of knowledge about what I should
exactly.
be eating. Let's get real here.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Keep, go on.
Yeah.
But so you went into episode that obviously that's ended. So
yeah.
Tell us how that
well, it took
evolved.
Really in my case, because I had no teachers. This was I began in 1969. And so I really didn't have teachers. I just had books that extolled the benefits of this way of living and didn't tell you anything about how to do it. And being raised by a Marine, my way of doing it was to try and force myself and to just hate myself if I didn't. Right. Mm-hmm. And that would be played out in alternating between being able to do very well for short periods and then fall off and do the exact opposite and just feel terrible about myself. And really, I went through years, Jeff, with my eating, of wrestling with it. And
what time of life would this have been for you, Charlie? You're talking in 30s?
I started when I was about, I think I was 23 when I began, right around
uh-huh.
there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And going through, I went to naturopathic college about, I think I was maybe 27 or so when I went there. And I was getting some control, but really quite erratic. And my ways of bringing about control were, well, it is me, if you would, trying to control myself.
Yeah.
And so as I would evolve, I would develop more sophisticated ways of going about this. In the early times, there was a time where I was a fundamentalist Christian, and I would get up in the morning. I was also real depressed at that time. I'd been doing a lot of drugs, and so all this went together. And I would get up in the morning and read the Bible and then pray, because I needed to emotionally prepare myself for the day. And I would also pray because at that time, to me, food was everything. That was the key to endless vitality and happiness. And I would pray to, you know, please allow me to be able to eat in the fashion that I want to today and to resist it. I would even write out what I was going to eat and write out prayers that I would say for that day. So, you know, practicing as well as I knew how at that age and or at that level of consciousness, and failing miserably. And I would say going on, there are just so many steps in my evolution with this. Yeah. And it has come to be something that has been increasingly more and more gentle, more and more a work of love rather than one of having to, bad if I don't. Just a real, I want this, and understanding or looking at where I am, just as you might with a physical workout, and say that this is leaning into it. This is a good step for me to do. And instead of trying to jump from, you know, eating miserably to eating perfectly, to be willing to engage in a process that has become increasingly subtle and increasingly not just food. So one big step for me was discovering that when I'm relaxed, when I'm happy with myself, when I'm at ease, I eat much better. And then beginning, it would be no different than food to then start being aware of what are the mental, emotional, psychological relationship indulgences that put me in a state where I eat poorly, my eating being a barometer or a feedback for it, and expanded to where now it's something that it's all entirely connected. And
so how many candy bars a day now?
I'm down to three.
That's me. Me too. No, you're not. You're on the straight and narrow, my friend, as far as
I'm concerned. On the straight and narrow.
Yeah. But this is so an effect. You know, you're 60-something. You're 67?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God, people. I wish we were on television. This guy looks like my son. I hate this. But anyway, Charlie, but this has been clearly something you valued all along, even when you were failing. You kept going back. This is maybe where some of the Marine stuff actually helped, and just good old gutting it out self-discipline.
Yeah,
and we, you know, not everybody's cut out for that or not everybody's as successful, but you just kept going and just cutting the grooves and cutting the grooves. And this is something that we're realizing more and more. Keith Witt, I have a monthly discussion with him, and he's a psychotherapist.
Keith Witt, fabulous.
He's great.
He's great.
And one of his hobbies is basically the upper right of, you know, the neurobiology of the brain.
Yeah.
And what we're realizing is just how plastic and formable the brain is.
Yeah.
And that we really can, through, you know, cutting these grooves, we can actually begin to rely on our ability to change ourselves and become the person that we consciously want to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. And I have several examples of, I think of Ken Wilber, who he's just ferociously disciplined. Those are the words he has used to describe himself. And it's true. And he'll talk about getting up at 3 a.m, stopping at the bathroom, maybe making a cup of coffee, but that's it. Going right to the writing.
Wow.
And just sticking with it and, you know, letting the flow happen.
Yeah.
So that we can get into that, where we can trust the grooves to carry us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we're getting some insight into this.
Yes.
And your achievement in this big category that so many of us struggle with, food, is really inspiring. And so at this point, tell us about, you know, how easy is it, or, you know, how do you relate to it now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see a candy bar laying around, you go to restaurants, you're still a human being. You're tuned to sugar and fats and
like
the rest of us.
That's right.
How do you relate to it now? How do you do it?
Well, now for me, it's like anybody's art. It is you in the earlier stages, you're crude, and if it's music, it's a while before you can do anything that actually sounds decent.
Mm-hmm. Unless you hit your head.
Yeah.
That's the other strategy, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I'll talk about how it is for me and how I see it for increasing numbers of people, because we're so much more evolved now than we were when I began. The conversations that we're having, as far as I knew, didn't exist. I never heard them exist. I wasn't aware that there were hardly any books on such topics. And now what is coming online, I mean, in terms of the reality of who we are as our non-dual selves, if you would, that's permeating the culture. And, yeah. And you know, below that, ways of being able to engage challenge with retaining one's self-esteem, having room for making mistakes, including in our lives our flaws and our the stuff about ourselves that we just hate, and being able to converse about that. Well, aside from the cultural level of it, I have many clients who can do this, is what I'm saying. I can do this, and we have this ability, a larger ability to be self-observant. We can see more of ourselves.
Yeah.
And in that, naturopathic medicine says that the foundations of illness are ignorance and indifference, which is the same thing that Buddha says,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, I was just thinking that one of the things that really aids self-discipline, especially as we, you know, as we move into post-modernity and liberalism and discipline, we don't even value it in a certain way. It's about self-expression and doing what feels good and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a certain reaction and antibody to that marine dad kind of thing that actually keeps people at an amber altitude relatively disciplined on it. You know, but so we sort of lose that. But one of the ways we gain it back is, and I'm thinking of what you're just talking about, the self-observation that starts to come online as post-modernity anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's really, really facilitated by meditation.
Absolutely.
Because meditation is basically a calisthenic of self-observation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You literally just build muscles of self-observation, and when you go off track, you just, with a smile, bring yourself back. It's a little bit like you're talking about in this bigger picture of you. Okay, so I see myself, Charlie. I see, you know, I'm flawed. I have my good days, my bad days. I include those, and I still come back to my object of meditation.
Yes. Yeah, the discipline becomes so much more refined. It becomes the core of my personal discipline now, and my edge is exactly what you're describing. I can watch myself passionately wanting to, we'll say, eat in this fashion, to avoid this, to develop this, and think about it, and how do I do that? And really, what are my obstacles, and what's stopping me, and building my passion for it, and observing closely so that I can accomplish what it is I want to. And at the same time, I can watch me doing that as that's what's going on right now. In the next moment, I could be thinking about, you know, what I'm going to plant in the garden, as you know. But the ability to be detached from that whole thing. In other words, I was going to say I've gained Charlie's dharma or his destiny. This is what I do. I'm a naturopathic doctor. So I think about these things, and that's where my juice is. And I'm going to do that. You know, that's what I'm going to do. And I just let Charlie do that now. Yeah. And the discipline is in letting go of giving a damn what Charlie does. And I don't have to let go of it. It's just my state. And knowing myself as not Charlie is, you know, the central discipline. And then along with his worries that if he doesn't think about it enough, he may not accomplish this. And all of that is in the meditative state is just allowed to be. And from that, I know directly. I'm infusing myself with a love that is absolutely who I am, and I know it. And
yeah,
it's incredible.
Well, it's almost like getting to this second part of it. We see part one is that we can actually, through discipline, create these grooves and trust them and so forth. And then this other part that goes back to the savants is that there's another means of self-development, which means in dropping some of the inhibitions and dropping some of the ideas of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some of the fruits of self-observation, as you're talking about. You actually see Charlie. And so there's both are true. You're sort of seeing Charlie vividly and also being allowing that to arise in a more liberated space.
Absolutely.
That you can actually see that Charlie has a certain gift or almost a charism.
Yes.
Which is this food, energy, life force thing that you walk into a room and change the chemistry, Charlie, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you... It's probably a karmic gift.
Yes.
That you now have an ability to, sort of deconstruct some of the inhibitions around.
Yeah. I wrote an article entitled The Courage to Smoke. and I was in Peru studying with a couple of the most marvelous human beings that I know. And my teacher would smoke, and we would go out to these places in Peru that are just being in them is transformative, the power of place, and sit down there and smoke cigarette. And so then when I came back to Boulder, and I'd like to stop and go sit down somewhere and smoke a cigarette. And of course, in Boulder, this just doesn't fit at all.
You can't even do it outside now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So coming back here, and so for me, Charlie Cropley smoking cigarettes, it would be the conversations that would raise. It's like, come on, man, I've worked my whole life to get this freedom and develop this health. And like, what am I doing here, sitting here smoking a cigarette? I know I'm going to regret this, da-da-da, take another hit,
right?
Look at the moon, let it go. And for me, I recognize that all the conversation about what this means about Charlie and what if other people now see me and what are they going to think, all this stuff that goes on, what a great meditation. And to be able to be with that and truly not know, am I going to keep smoking and keep doing this, or am I not? And the whole conversation about Charlie just is allowed to be what it is in the moment. It's such a more powerful place to be. And I call it the courage to smoke because I could absolutely, in this moment, I'm smoking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this moment, these thoughts are coming. As I went through this, I found myself doing things, smoking dope and drinking coffee and eating chocolate again and doing things all with the same need. It was like a higher discipline coming online of my freedom in this moment is the ultimate attainment. I am completely free here. And what Charlie does really, I mean, I appreciate it's of consequence to Charlie, but that'll change. I was just completely free from it. And not knowing if this new self-observing place is going to lead to degeneration,
yes.
Right? And,
yes.
And suffering.
Which it can.
That's my cutting edge, is my experiment. And it seems to me that the goodness, I know, the goodness and the power of this non-dual who I really am is, I know it to be trustworthy.
And geared and, towards health.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
toward
yeah.
What's beautiful, true,
right.
Good.
But so you're really, talking about some sort of high-end consciousness here where you're both allowing that freedom, even indulging in it, watching it, being released from it. I think of Trungpa Rinpoche, who started the Buddhist community here in Boulder and Naropa University, Shambhala, and all of that. And of course, he died of an alcoholic bleed out at, I think, age 42. Did all of this while he was, drunk, basically falling down drunk.
Falling down drunk.
And he's not the only Buddhist teacher and progressive spiritual teacher who had that problem. Some students did interventions and some didn't. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, there's a certain teaching in that even.
Yeah.
You know, just this, that we're not to hold on to this life. And at the same time, there's a certain tragedy to it. And I'm still trying to sort it out. I'm not here to, you know, pretend that I have. Mm-hmm. But I do think, and in your case, Charlie, that the habits you formed and the freedom that you've attained are reliably healthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So coming back to a couple things, this, just for clarity, the conversation has been about eating primarily.
Yeah.
And I view myself as not particularly great at anything except maybe naturopathic medicine. But the other discipline of like movement, like the, it's the exact same work, being in the body and paying attention to the body and seeing what is it that it needs and what am I capable of giving and working with a certain body of knowledge about what constitutes functional movement and learning so that living in the body in terms of posture, walking, stooping, twisting, lifting, that too is not even two, it's the exact same discipline. So we're always moving, and that then is a conversation that goes on. And then there's the conversation of our mind, of watching that, which can be, we could say, the, on one level, choosing positive thoughts versus negative, positive emotions versus negative ones, but learning to use one's mind so that in order to accomplish and be accomplished at anything, be it business, be it relationship, be it eating, be it anything, is it requires, you know, you must want that and gain some understanding of it and have belief that you can do this. And all of this is our thought formations that go on. And so, again, being with the mind, so in my case for myself, and I think for most of us, to have an internal voice that is, I love you so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're precious to me. I completely want the best for you, and I want you to feel that right now. Mm-hmm. So that I might be feeling that then through those words, I might be feeling that through the relaxation in the way that I'm sitting. I might be feeling that through the choice to put a little less dressing on the salad or to push the bowl away at a certain point. And likewise, then in relationship would be another one to really be able to listen and allow what's there, you know, to be heard, to really feel another person, and then to find my vulnerable truth and be able to share that. So those are all of those together. My experience is that instead of before, like focusing on eating, the real discipline here is our own love for ourselves, our own kindness. And in any moment, you just check out, you know, in this moment, it may be the way that I'm speaking to myself internally or the your and my interaction, but there's always that to be expressed. And it constitutes a whole where I believe, and my experience is that if I live this moment fully and caringly and come away from it, I come away from it complete and really energized for then in the next moment, I'm meeting my friend for lunch or I'm seeing a client or I'm going for a workout, but whatever it is, they're all connected.
Well, it's almost like you're hitting on the master practice, which is love.
Yes,
and particularly
absolutely.
Self-love in a non-narcissistic way.
Yes.
And this is part of the fruit of self-observation, is that when you actually develop this capacity of consciousness to see oneself instead of just compulsively play oneself out,
yes,
then you actually can love yourself. It sort of take the position of God, where I love you, you're precious,
yes.
You're a one of a kind.
Yes.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Aren't you something?
Yeah.
instead of, you know, look at you, you lazy, you know, slob.
I could love you if only you would stop.
Exactly. If only you were more lovable.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
If you weren't such a... If you weren't such a loser.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's good. But that itself is a practice because we could catch ourselves with our sort of loser meta talk and change that to a lover.
Yes.
You know, meta talk.
Yes.
And that itself is a practice.
Yes.
That sort of really helps. This is inspiring to me, Charlie, actually. I mean, it feel like I just had a session with you that he's listening to. But that's very, very helpful to me to hear that right now.
Yeah.
And I imagine for our listeners too, you know, it's really does open up so much where it, the particulars of whatever it is we're doing, whether it's sitting up straight or eating better or working out or loving our lover or, you know, they're all just made more available to us in a loving space.
Yes. Yeah. My experience is that doing what's good in this moment, being true to myself in this moment, or which is being kind and being intelligent, you know, that is as good as it gets, right? There isn't something to do beyond that.
Yeah.
It is.
$1 billion isn't really going to make that any better, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No. And the ceasing, the self-harming is, you know, the harming always carries with it regret. And we know we're going to suffer from it on some level, and the mind spins for that. Whereas, so if what we do, I don't know, let's say if you drink too much coffee, you know, so you have that conversation about that, and it will and does create various problems in the body and so on as you go on. But once you're not drinking coffee anymore, or in the moment you're not drinking coffee, there just isn't all that. There just isn't that. It's just perfect.
It just comes on sort of on its own. And it doesn't even feel like discipline then at that point.
Yeah.
And I think of, you know, it's just what a loving space calls forth is that to the degree that I'm in a loving space, I'm just not going to do harm.
Yes.
Period. You know, I mean, and yet I notice myself saying things to myself that I would never say to another human being. I would never be that cruel.
Right.
I see doing things to myself that I, my dog, I wouldn't, you know, I would never give, an unloving thought to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's a practice, interesting practice.
Yes. So there's all that practice, and that practice is all one level. I kind of call that the ordinary level of practice, and the unspeakable level of practice, which I learned through Balanced View for myself. Well, from a lot of non-dual teachers, but Balanced View really gave it to me, is that I'm now able to sit and allow the self-criticism, the worry, the, you know, the obsessive self-examination stuff, and really to allow that, that's what's there in the moment, and to be in that meditative space, which you don't have to do anything special to be there. It's just the allowing of it. In other words, it is the meta level of, I'm not trying to control this thing anymore. It's trying to control itself, you know, and doing this stuff. But truly, I don't care if this mind thinks that Charlie is good and doing well today, or that he's doing poorly and everything in between. To be able to really, as Candace would say, fear and fearlessness are not two, you know, peace and disturbance are not two. To know peace amid the disturbance and to actually have that be the reality, that it's simultaneously here, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And then not to turn that into, you know, I'm completely at peace with eating anything I want to or doing anything I want, you know, the rationale that comes in, but to really, it's... That's a meta level.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I believe to be the most powerful, the most pure goodness that there is.
Yeah. And this is some of the transmission you've gotten from Candace
O'Denver.
Mm-hmm. And the practice is called again?
The practice is summarized in a sentence that says, short moments, in other words, short moments of recognition of our true nature. Mm-hmm. They call it short moments of open intelligence. Repeated many times becomes continuous or automatic or just recognized to be the state that it is.
Yeah.
And the many times it is that whenever you think of it, to be able to allow this moment to be exactly as it is, mm-hmm. with all our converse, with everything, mm-hmm. every bit of it, you know, and to be completely free,
yeah.
in the midst of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And at the same time, then making choices. And,
exactly.
And doing things.
Exactly.
But what a relief to just let it be what it is.
It's the ultimate relief. I mean, what else can you do with it, really?
Well, I know. Shake your fist at it.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. Well, that's what I do.
Yeah.
But, sure. But no, that's a much better idea, and I thank you for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then to come back. This conversation that we're having now is, I don't have this with my clients. Right? They'd be going, what?
Yeah.
So there it is more the, how do I govern this behavior? And how does one move from, for most people, their strategy for bringing about improvement in behaviors where they want to improve is simply to try harder. And if that doesn't bring it about, there's usually disappointment, self-criticism, shame, all of that, which is, you know, the level of dysfunction that really needs to be healed in order to be able to change the behavior. And so I'm saying coming back to the level where most people are is that there's a whole technology of discipline. And I don't like the word discipline and I don't like the word self-control because they sound marine-like. When in fact, the art of them is essentially we gain competency in skillfulness in governing our behaviors by self-observation, which gives us understanding.
Yeah.
You know, to pay attention and watch instead of going on, no, I shouldn't have done that. Why'd that happen? And to look and say, how did this come about? People begin and we're working with nutrition, let's say in this case, and they're making improvements, and then you get to the holidays, right? And they come in and everything's unraveled and they've fallen apart. They're not feeling well again and they're feeling badly about it. But how did this happen? Well, when they go to a party, then the question would be, if you can, instead of criticizing yourself, if you can look and say, what was my attitude in going to the party? Was it all bets off here and we're going to go have some fun, which is fine, but is that what was going on? And was there any type of intention in that? Was there, or if it's not a party, if it's at other times, how tired was I? How emotionally poised or unpoised was I? How much sleep had I had? Where was I in my period? To start looking at what brought this about more objectively and be able to look, and you gain understanding, and understanding is power.
Yeah.
And what leads us to that, to want the understanding, as I say, what brings a person up to my front door is their goodwill towards themselves. They want a better life. They want to reduce their anxiety. They want to produce their health. There is this self-compassion or self-love that is there. And again, to feel that and to have a short moment or long moments of I'm even trying here. I care about this because I care about myself, because I love myself. And to be able to, I liken it to very much to training a child. You can't just train them like a Marine.
Right.
Yeah. And you have to teach them so that they develop understanding. But always there's the, I'm doing this because I love you. You don't get to eat all the sweets that you want to because I love you, because good for you, and I'm going to teach you why it's good for you, and you're going to learn this. But there's that. Now, that is the discipline, is the letting go of the unconscious ways of discipline so that love and so that real wisdom can be born here.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's very inspiring.
It's,
and mm-hmm. you know, really helpful. And I like what you're saying about just the short moments.
Mm-hmm.
Just of, as when I think of it, to just open things up a little bit, pour a little more love into the system, and then allow it to be what it is.
Yes.
And sort of trust the result of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And trust that there actually is an arising of goodness, truth, and beauty in me, in us, in you, in the cosmos that is trustworthy.
Yeah.
And that it's a little bit like the savant. Sometimes it comes on by dismantling what's getting between you and it.
Yeah.
Dismantling what's getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like all of this has to sort of be online.
Yeah.
We sort of want
all
that,
of it.
That discipline.
Right.
We want that freedom. We want to trust.
Yes.
We want to, you know, practice.
Yeah.
And you're a living example of what the results of that can be. So I think we've covered a good territory here, Charlie. Is there anything else you'd like to throw into the pot before we wrap it up?
Well, on one hand, the dismantling of the ego, this selfish little guy who he wants to eat whatever he wants to, whenever he wants to, and he doesn't care if it gives headaches, if it causes joint, he doesn't care, right? And the dismantling of that, or the, you know, the growing of oneself up, the disattachment from the ego, how difficult that work is. But as you and Keith were saying, is that simultaneously, it's like, what a joy. It's like, it's the greatest game in town of getting to manifest your goodness in this body. I mean, it's the ultimate, it's what we got bodies for, right? And we get to embody love and embody wisdom, and that's what we're all looking for.
Yeah. Beautifully put, very inspiring, and we'll check back again and take another round.
Right on, Jeff.
All right. Thanks again, Charlie.
Yes.
Charlie Cropley.